argument is Unisia versus Union. Mr. Johnson.
May it please the Court, my name is Gary Johnson. I'm a lawyer with Beckman Lawson in Fort Wayne, Indiana. I represent the appellant Carl Schmidt Unisia. This case is an appeal by Carl Schmidt Unisia from a grant of summary judgment in order to arbitrate from the lower court in favor of the appellees, United Auto Workers, and Mr. Jenkins and Smith. This case commenced as a complaint filed by Carl Schmidt.
If you just copied the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, word for word, into your ERISA plan, would that mean that the ERISA, whoever your ERISA adjudicator is, would determine the meaning of all of these provisions? Isn't that the logic of your argument?
If you copied the entire collective bargaining agreement into the terms of the ERISA right. plan, would that allow the ERISA adjudicator to construe?
Right.
That would certainly set up a conflict, I think,
that would be preposterous, right?
Yeah,
the
terms of the plan.
And that's what Boesus did here, right? In effect. Right? In effect. Take a term. There are eligibility conditions set forth in the collective bargaining agreement. And you take them and you put them into the pension fund, and then you say, well, now the interpreter is not the arbitrator, it's your ERISA committee, whatever it is, ERISA.
Retirement committee. No. There are five lines in the pension plan that have some eligibility requirements that were specifically negotiated by the union. The union came to the negotiations in 2005, wanted to make changes, and they negotiated changes, and those changes were built into the collective bargaining agreement. The ERISA plan predates those negotiations. The ERISA plan is 72 pages long, dealing with all kinds of eligibility requirements and obligations. There are definitions that go far and above and beyond what the collective bargaining agreement includes. The answer to this question, we believe, is this question is answered by determining where
the collective bargaining agreement can certainly change the eligibility requirements in the pension plan.
Certainly,
yeah,
certainly, and those negotiated changes to the collective bargaining agreement should be incorporated into the terms of the pension plan. We don't have an argument on that point. In this case, this is an eligibility requirement that was never negotiated. It's outside of the.
Well, why is it outside? Because the relevant part of the collective bargaining agreement is brief, and it refers to eligibility conditions. And if there's something missing, why isn't that for the arbitrator to fill in? Right? I mean, interpretation of a contract often involves interpolating terms that, you know, the parties didn't think about.
Well, the arbitration provision itself defines the scope of authority that the arbitrator has. And the arbitrator's scope of authority from Section 4.03 is that the arbitrator is confined by the agreement, cannot alter, add to, or subtract from the provisions of the agreement. The arbitrator's authority derives.
If the agreement is vague, it has to be interpreted. And that's not going outside the agreement. That's what interpretation is. On your interpretation, there'd never be arbitration because you think that the union can only rely on absolutely explicit and unambiguous. What do you need an arbitrator for? Don't you acknowledge that arbitrators have interpretive powers?
Certainly, as it relates to the terms of the collective bargaining agreement.
Right. And those terms include eligibility conditions.
Some of the eligibility.
And if you just read the agreement, it looks as if, well, if you get to be, you know, 57, the critical question is, can you get to age 57 when you've been on layoff for several years? That's the critical question.
That's right.
That's not addressed in the collective bargaining agreement, but it is critical to the interpretation of the collective bargaining agreement, right? Is this, is layoff status relevant to your 30 years, right?
There are a number of eligibility criteria that do not reside in the collective bargaining agreement. The collective bargaining agreement says that an employee earns a year of credited service. You know, we talk about one of the criteria is you have to have 30 years of service, for example, for one of those. And that's just about all that the collective bargaining agreement says. And it says that the employee has 1,600 hours of credited or has a year of credited service.
The arbitrator could say, well, there's just nothing here, right? There's nothing there's nothing I can do with this. But usually we say, you know, it has to go to the arbitrator unless it's, you know, completely outlandish suggestion. And then it's for the arbitrator to say whether the contract... The arbitrator might well conclude that there is nothing to prevent the company from doing what it did. But doesn't he get first crack at that?
I don't think so in this case, Your Honor, because the eligibility criteria that the employee have not been terminated at the time they attain the required age.
Look, it says the 30 and out provision applies only to those employees who have reached, say, age 58 and 30 years of service. So the question is, what does service mean? Does it mean you have to actually be working, or could you be on layoff?
And all of that's defined.
Yeah, and so the arbitrator has to decide that. Now, he might say, well, this is all in the pension plan. He might say that. But doesn't he have to get the first crack at it? Because, as you agree, the interpretation of the word service is critical. You say that interpretation is in the pension plan. Okay, the arbitrator may well agree with you, but doesn't he get a chance to, you know, put in his two cents worth?
But the question...
Look at the history of negotiations. He'd say, this is ambiguous. We have to look at the negotiations. We have to look at what the union people and the company people said to each other. And maybe he'd decide that, yeah, it's pretty clear they really intended this, you know, layoff could count toward your 30 years, right?
But the question of arbitrability is for the court. And so the arbitrator doesn't get first crack at it.
What's unarbitrable about the question what the word service means?
Well, it's termination is the disputed term from the pension plan. We say that...
You say that service incorporates the termination provision of the pension plan. The arbitrator might disagree with you.
No, we don't say that service incorporates the term termination. So I was about to give an example of a definition of service that is in the pension plan but not in the collective bargaining agreement, and that may be the source of the confusion. What we say is that you have to attain the age.
Now, I'm asking you what you think service means.
What I think service means. Well, in the pension plan, there's a multifaceted...
What does it mean here?
What does it mean there?
This collective bargaining agreement uses the word service. Yes. I want to know what does that word
but
mean?
It's not the years of service that's the issue in this case. It's the age.
Okay, right. Is it age 50? Right, all right. I misspoke. So age 50.
You have to have attained the age by the time of termination, according to the pension plan. The term termination exists in this context only in the collective bargaining.
It certainly doesn't say this. It says age 58 and 30 years of service. So couldn't an arbitrator say, well, you're 58, and you had 30 years of service. It's true, you were on layoff for 10 years. But still, you are 58, and the way I read service, you had 30 years, so you're eligible.
If an arbitrator, I suppose, could do that, but we think that would be improper because...
Wait a second.
It's a merits argument.
Right.
It's not. And here's why. In interpretation, context is everything. All right? An employee's service can be terminated. Their seniority can be terminated under the collective bargaining agreement. That means something. That means, in plain terms, they've been fired. An employee can remain an employee but have their rights in the health plan terminated. That means something in the context of the health plan. They're still an employee, but perhaps they didn't pay the premiums. So their health insurance has been terminated. That means something in the context of the health plan. In the context of the pension plan, the retirement committee would say, those employees have been terminated at the time of layoff. So we have to go to the source of the word to understand what it means in that context.
This sounds exactly what you'd be saying to the arbitrator.
Right. That's a merits argument. The problem with your argument here is that the 30 and out provision is you know, incorporated into the collective bargaining agreement. It was clearly negotiated for, and the arbitration clause provides that any dispute over terms of the CBA are subject to arbitration. And where your argument resides is in subsidiary rules of eligibility that are found in the pension plan, which is a merits argument, not an arbitrability argument. This is plainly arbitrable. It's very straightforward. Because it's a term in the CBA, and it's got some specificity to it, and it was plainly part of the parties' negotiations, and you're seeking refuge in an additional rule of eligibility that exists in the plan, which is an argument to address to the arbitrator.
If respectfully, I disagree. If you look at the cases that have cited that have been cited by both sides, and both sides cited three or four cases each. You know, the facts are all over the place, but there is a sort of straightforward distinction between those cases.
What's a case that's like this?
I think one of the cases that is most like this is this court's case in Nabisco. And I think the straightforward distinction in the cases that we cite versus the cases that suggest arbitrability is the answer.
What's Nabisco about?
Nabisco is a circumstance where Nabisco sold a food plant to a purchaser. The purchaser assumed the collective bargaining agreement, hired all of the employees. There was no interruption, and the employees claimed that when they went from one employer to the other, that was a job termination. Because under the pension plan, a job termination allowed them the option of a special early retirement. And this court held that it wasn't an arbitrable issue because there was the entire pension
plan. You're saying in that case the employees relied on the pension plan, but here they're relying on this collective bargaining agreement. They're hoping the arbitrator will interpret it in a way that allows them to have their layoff credited.
No, in that case, the answer to the question posed by the employees was resided in the pension plan, just as the answer to the question posed by the employees here resides in the pension plan.
The way you described Nabisco, the employees were relying on a provision in the pension plan. That's how you described it. They were looking to the pension plan for the support of their argument, not to this collective bargaining agreement.
Right, and that sort of a dispute isn't a grievance within the meaning of a collective bargaining agreement subject to arbitration. It's a very different case. And it was also in the context of a sale of a company, which is not a factual gloss that we have here.
I think that if you examine Nabisco and the other cases cited in our brief, one defining factor that distinguishes arbitrable issues from issues that are deferred to the claims procedure in the retirement committee is where does the answer to the underlying question lie? I'm not arguing the underlying merits that we're right or wrong. That'll be decided later on. But where that answer resides...
That's a question for the arbitrator, as it would be in any contract.
Or for the ERISA claims procedure in the retirement committee.
A party can say, look, this agreement obligates us to deliver 1,000 tons of coal a month at X price. But there's another agreement here which waives certain provisions of this first agreement, and that's where you ought to look. And if there's an arbitration clause in the first contract, but not the second, the arbitrator is still going to look at the second contract for what light it sheds on the meaning of the first. So this arbitrator can look at the pension plan to see what light it casts on the CBA, but he's still doing his interpretive task.
We believe that where the dispute is heard is important.
Yeah, but you're wrong. Sorry. So thank you, Mr. Johns. Do you have anything to say, Ms. Macy? Or do you want to repeat what we've been saying?
I spent a nice evening in Chicago last night, so I might as well say a few words. Actually, even before you spoke, I was going to say that there's an excellent treatment of this case and of the issues and of the applicable cases on both sides, and that's in Judge Van Bocklen's decision, which very carefully goes through the standards that are applicable, which are very well established, and which also distinguishes the cases very ably. So I don't want to say anything about our brief or even the other party's brief, but it's better, really, than either of the briefs in this case. It's very, very well done, and there's very little that can be added. I can perhaps give a little context, and I just want to make clear in this case, and I think already the Court's been thinking about this, that the decision under the collective bargaining agreement can be decided without any reference to the pension book at all. The question under the collective bargaining agreement is whether the language of Section 13.01 is violated, whether that provision is violated by denying employees on layoff who already have 30 years of credited service the ability to meet the requirement that they be a certain age while they're on layoff. That's really the issue, and the question is whether the company's action in denying them that benefit violates the collective bargaining agreement.
The termination rule wasn't subject to any negotiations. That was unilaterally imposed.
No, and in fact, this issue of the 30 and out benefit has been negotiated in 2001, 2002, and 2005. So it's been a major subject of negotiations, and they've gone a little bit back and forth. Prior to 2002, an employee with credited service, that's all they had. There was no age requirement, and so it didn't matter if they were on layoff or not. You actually don't get credited service on layoff unless there are a few special circumstances, workers' comp layoff, for example. So before 2002, no issue. 2002, they put in the age requirement, and the argument for that, I think, was, and the reason, this is speculation, but the reason a union would agree to that is to, because that's a fair amount of liability, possibly a 10-year liability for the company with respect to all these employees, and the company comes in and says, you know, we'll be more financially sound, et cetera, if we can have a fixed liability starting at 58, coming back into, so that the union agreed to that. No evidence of any issue coming up with respect to the application of that between 2002 and 2005. These are, you'll understand, very senior people, so unlikely to be frequently on layoff or on layoff for a long time. In 2005, the union comes back in and says, well, look, why can't we just back this up a little? Probably they have certain people in mind who are about ready to retire, and if they that have tons of years of service, there could be people with 40 years of service or 39 years of service who wouldn't qualify. So at that time, they come back and they get this agreement. The thing that's important to remember is that there are all kinds of things in the benefit books that are not in the collective bargaining agreement. But when the parties decide to negotiate over something, to memorialize them in the collective bargaining agreement, then one thing that accomplishes, it makes it an item that can be and that is resolved under the procedures of the collective bargaining agreement, which is the grievance and arbitration procedure. That's the one thing you get by putting the language in the agreement as opposed to leaving it for decision in the pension booklet. And the other thing I'd like to point out, if it's not clear in the briefs, is that this termination language, termination of employment language, That was inserted in the pension book after the 2005 negotiations. At the time of the 2005 negotiations, the language was that you have to attain the age at the time of retirement. As of his retirement. So therefore, you don't have any problem. When you retire, whatever, as long as you're still an employee, then you reach the age and you retire. So the prior language was not something the union was concerned about. There's no evidence that there was any problem with respect to giving this benefit to retirees. So there's no reason to presume that there's something in the benefit plan that takes precedence over the collective bargaining agreement. There is really no case cited in this decision, and no case that I could find, where a court has held that entitlement to a benefit provided in a collective bargaining agreement is not arbitrable because the benefit is also provided in a benefit plan. The company is contractually bound to whatever it negotiates with the union, and that includes whatever it negotiates with the union and whatever it includes in the collective bargaining agreement. In this case, language is not always clear. The crucial language, if we were to arbitrate this case, we think is employee. And the question of whether employee includes employees on retirement. That's why the union cited, and we also cited in our brief, Section 6 of the contract. Section 6 has to do with termination of seniority, which is it's sort of your life in the game. You still have employment status. As long as you're laid off, you're still a laid off employee entitled to recall for a certain period of time, which is set out in Section 6. So our view is that employee means employee under the contract. The company has a different view, and they think it means employee under the pension plan.
So the issue just applies to employees who are on layoff when they reach 58, is that? Or 57?
56, 57,
right.
58. That's the group we're talking about. And
would they ever get anything?
What happened in this plant is there was a WARN right after this language appeared. There was a WARN notice, a mass layoff within. Mr. Johnson would probably have a better recollection of the exact date, but within a couple of years. I think there were 2008 negotiations, but that plant then closed. So,
do you know how many employees had the required years of service and would qualify for this benefit under your interpretation?
I asked my colleague in my firm who did the hands-on negotiation with this, and we're thinking it's around 30.
Okay.
These people still retain several. Many of them would have aged in within the time while the plant was still operating. But actually, technically, they still retain recall benefits in the event this plant reopens.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Mr. Johnson, your time had expired, but if you have something further. Okay.
Sure. In response to the arguments that I made earlier, the answer was, you can make those arguments to the arbitrator. And if we just step back and think about that for a second, if it goes to the arbitrator, the company's going to respond, citing ERISA, that the plan administrator's interpretation of the plan can be overturned only by a finding that the interpretation is arbitrary and capricious. It's a completely different standard that would be employed in the arbitration section than in ERISA. And federal court jurisprudence, federal courts have the institutional competence to interpret and apply ERISA and the arbitrary and capricious standard, which is a completely different standard than a breach of contract.
I see the relevance to that, as Ms. Macy said, the employer can contractually commit to the union and can provide that a dispute, and the agreement can provide the dispute will be arbitrated, regardless of what's in the ERISA plan.
We believe that Congress drafted ERISA to give us a consistent framework.
No, that's not right. I mean, was she wrong when she said that parties a collective bargaining agreement can grant a benefit regardless of the ERISA plan, and that, and then a dispute arising out of the clause granting that plan, that benefit, is arbitrable.
She was correct, but our point is the dispute doesn't arise out of that clause. It arises out of an eligibility criteria that is only in the pension plan.
And, of course, this is what leads you to smilingly suggest that maybe you can put the whole collective bargaining agreement into ERISA and completely extinguish arbitration over any benefits issue.
I believe we made that suggestion, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much to both counsel. Next case for argument is...